Welcome to Have You Heard, the AABP podcast. My name is Dr. Fred Gingrich, and today we're joined by AABP member Dr. Mark Hilton. Mark, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, please?
Sure. So I'm a farm kid from Indiana, grew up on a swine and beef farm and went to Purdue to animal science and veterinary college, and then took a job as a private practitioner in an 80% farm animal practice in DeWitt, Iowa, with Dr. Bill Speer, who was a wonderful mentor to me. Was a partner in that practice for 15 years, thought I'd be there forever, but we had started having lots of extern students, and Fred, that messed up my head, and Purdue called and said, how would you like to come and teach? So I did that for 18 years. I was food animal ambulatory, mostly beef cattle, and taught the beef production medicine class, and also was privileged enough the last 10 years I was there to teach the business and communications class. And then I'm happy as a clam, and Elanco calls and said, how would you like to come work for us? And I thought, you know what? I like change. I like, kind of stretching myself. And the more they talked to me, the more I thought this might be a good opportunity. So I've been a technical consultant on the beef team for the last little over 5 years with Elanco Animal Health.
This episode of Have You Heard is sponsored by Elanco Animal Health. More calves, less stress. That's what VirusShield from Elanco delivers. It's a cattle vaccine that provides more than just coverage against up to 13 respiratory and reproductive diseases. It also protects your herd without impairing pregnancy rates. Research shows the VirusShield line of cattle vaccine can be given to any cow, anytime, and not negatively impact preg rates or reproductive performance. Also, you can stress less and produce more. Talk to your veterinarian about incorporating VirusShield into your herd health program or learn more at virusshield.com.
It sounds like, Mark, that you've enjoyed every phase of your career, private practice, academia, industry, and it's kind of brings us to the topic of our podcast today, which Mark suggested, and the topic is loving veterinary practice every day. Well, maybe not every day, because I'm sure you've had challenges in every job that you have had, but maybe tell us what inspired you to send me that email and suggest this topic.
Yep, you're absolutely correct. So I'm a member of the Bovine Vet Truck Facebook group. They let a few of us old veterinarians on there to, you know, give some advice every once in a while, I guess. And I'm going to be frank. I'm a straight shooter kind of a person. You don't have to wonder what I'm thinking, because sometimes, maybe sometimes I shouldn't say what's on my mind, but I'm going to say what's on my mind. I see too many responses from young veterinarians where they're complaining about their clients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have all had clients that, you know, in the old days when we called in on the radios, right, Mark? And they'd say, so-and-so called, and you're like, oh, goodness. You know, you're like, you're hoping that maybe somebody else is closer to that person on the calls that day. But, you know, there's a saying that 5% of our clients cause 95% of our problems. That's probably true in any business. But, you know, how do we approach that 5%? What do we need to do when Mr. Smith calls us and he's that grouchy old farmer? What do we need to do there?
Right. So I mentioned that I got to teach the business and communications class at Purdue. And because I don't have a business degree, I did a lot of reading on the subject because I wanted to do a good job for the students. And in one of my readings, I came across a blog post from a person in India, a businessman in India. And this person said, I've spent thousands of dollars on seminars, books, tapes, etc. And the best piece of advice I've ever received on communication skills was to imagine that every person that I meet is holding a sign in front of them that says, make me feel special. I thought that was one of the most powerful communications lessons I've ever learned. Make the person feel special. So find out about them. Ask open-ended questions and let them talk. Everyone loves to tell their story. You know, people will say, oh, I'm an introvert. Baloney. When you start asking somebody about themselves, they love to, you know, they love to tell about themselves. My grandfather was a master of this technique. And the students in my business class all knew my grandpa because I talked about him all the time. But everyone loved him. And one of his favorite quotes was, "It is better to be interested than interesting." Mm-hmm. So really, to be more specific, to answer your question of how do we approach the 5%, it really depends on the person. If I can explain to that person that our clinic has, and I'm using air quotes here, rules, I couldn't think of a better term to use than that, but our clinic has rules and they adapt to the rules, then they move from the 95% or from the 5% into the 95%. So job done. Now, if that does not work, and this is evident by the stress level of your staff or yourself, then you need to either become, again, too busy for them, or you need to let them know that you'll not service them from this day forward. If you continue to provide service for these clients that just can't follow the rules, it may be substandard service that they get. And that's not fair to their animals, right? My partner in practice said, you know, the animals we serve didn't pick their owners. If the owner's not that great, we still need to provide great service. But then if you service those people and then you complain to your staff about them or your spouse or your friends about them, then I think that's the definition of insanity. You know, that just doesn't make sense. But I've heard of veterinarians that have clients that owe them a lot of money and they're not paying their bill. And the veterinarian, I had a veterinarian tell me this, and he says, "Well, I have to keep going there or they'll never pay me." That's crazy logic. Yeah. We had a handful of clients when I was in practice that had a charge limit that when they got to that, that was it. So let's say the limit was $1,000. So when they got to that level and they called for service, no matter if it was a monthly herd check or a herd health swine or whatever it was, or an emergency, you know, a sick animal, our receptionist would calmly let them know that they'd reached their limit and they had to pay half of their balance and the full amount of that day's work for us to come out there. If they said they didn't have the money, and I'm scratching my head, I can never think of that happening. Never. Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't go. We drew a line in the sand. Now, I do recall a few times where they paid that day's charge with a check, but they didn't have the money to pay let's say it was $1,000. So they had to pay $500. They didn't have that, but in 7 to 10 days they would. So they gave us a post-dated check for the other half of the balance. And we never had problems. But if the bill is huge, stop letting them charge. Work out a plan to pay so much per month. And now they pay the full price of the current day's work and pay a little bit every time that you go out. But the bigger the bill, the more likely it's not going to get paid. And I can see how I would have gotten very frustrated with a few clients if we would have let them, just keep charging and charging. And we just, when I sold the business, when I left practice, an accountant looked over our books, a different accountant than we used, because I told the young veterinarians, you really should have somebody else look at everything. Our bad debt expense was 0.1%. And the accountant called me and she goes, "That can't be right." And I go, "Yeah, it is." We just didn't let it happen. Right. Yep. And so, the huge majority of our clients, we just enjoyed working with them. We really did.
Yeah. And I think that I've always felt like you attract the clients that you want to serve.
Bingo.
If you have these, certain rules, and every practice has rules. I mean, we had a rule that if you have a sick cow, we did dairy work. If you have a sick cow that you want looked at, we'd like you to call by 10 o'clock. Obviously, yes. An emergency is a different situation. Sure. But if you know when you're done milking in the morning, you got a sick cow, please call by 10. That way we can plan our routes and keep our trip fees low.
Right.
And when dairymen understood that, I'm like, this is a team. If I got to drive 30 miles to come out here, you're going to have to pay more. Mm-hmm. And I might not be able to get here till later. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a non-emergency, we're going to do it the next day.
Right.
And you can't let people do things to you that you don't want them to do to you. So we have to do that.
Your use of the word team is exactly the way we thought of our clients.
Yes. So,
and they had to care more than we did about those. And I've got a story for that, in a bit. So yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. So, you know, we often grade our clients. You know, we have the A clients, the B clients, the C clients, et cetera. I think probably many practices have that. It's not formal. It's just kind of in our brain memory bank. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so how can we develop clients to become better clients, especially if we're young, especially if we're a young veterinarian?
You bet. Absolutely. That's a great question. And I think it really, the clientele reflects the veterinarian. I did a meeting, and I won't say where it was or anything like that. This veterinarian owns two clinics. The one that this veterinarian has owned for quite a while, I did a producer meeting. It was fantastic. Great questions. Intelligent producers. Did one the next evening at the client that the veterinarian just purchased opposite. Unbelievable how uninformed. These clinics are 30 miles apart. Right. So I think the veterinarian is so important to help that client develop into what they can be. But anyway, to answer your question, I'm an optimist. I'm an absolute optimist. But even I realize not all clients can be A, B, or even C clients. Some of them are just not going to be there. So at the start of a professional relationship that I have with a client, I assume that they want to be an A client. And I start by asking them their goals. It's the most important thing that I can probably tell you this whole podcast is ask those clients, you know, new clients, ask them what their goals are. Why are you calling me? What's my goal here? Why do you want me to come and start a herd health program? Ask them what the two of you together, your team, can accomplish. Ask them how you can become an asset to their business. So I'm going to tell you a story about Marty. He and I were on extension council together in our county, dairyman. He was within our practice area, on the edge of our practice area. But he said, I want to start a monthly herd health. And I said, really? Why? I didn't write. Oh, yes. Great. More money for me. Why do you want to do that? And he explained some of the issues that he was having. And I said, great. Mm-hmm. And I said, let me look at my schedule and find out, you know, I said, we generally don't do herd health on Monday or Friday, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I said, does it matter to you? He said, nope, doesn't matter. I looked, and yeah, I don't remember when it was. Let's say it was the third Thursday of the month. So I show up, we preg check cows, et cetera. This is before computers, Fred. I'm graphing his DHIA data out on graph paper. You know, I did my first practice tips, I think, you know, like 33 years ago on graphing out. Oh, man, I'm making myself sound old. Anyway. So long story short, I'm working for Marty for about 2 years. He's making no progress whatsoever, really zero. And he would bring a cow in that was supposed to be 6 months pregnant and she'd be open. I'm like, why wasn't she checked, you know, when she was 35 days? Oh, I forgot about her for 4 months. So anyway, I show up there and the latest we would start our herd health in the morning was 9:30. And I show up at 9:30 and pull up to the barn, cows aren't in. Look around, I don't see him. I think, what's going on? I go up to the house, I knock on the door. He comes to the door, and it's obviously he was in bed. And I looked at him, and I said, did you forget we had herd health this morning? He said, oh, I stayed up until like 3 in the morning watching a movie last night. I overslept. And I looked at him, and I said, you know what, Marty? I said, I'm not coming anymore. I says, we're not doing this. I said, you're always behind on your bill. You hit your limit all the time. You're not making any progress. I said, you know, it's not working. And he looked at me and he goes, you know what the problem is, don't you? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, you want me to be better than I want me to be. I should have opened up my wallet and handed him whatever cash I had, because that was some of the best continuing education I had ever had in my life. His marriage was in trouble, and I knew that. He was always grumpy. And I said to him, Marty, why are you milking cows if you don't like it? He said, oh, my dad would have a fit if I quit. His dad was also one of our clients. He was an A client. Marty was a D or F client. And I said, Marty, how old are you? 35. I says, you can tell your dad you hate milking. I says, ask your dad, call him or drive over to his farm and say, Dad, do you want me to be happy? He's going to say yes and tell him, you don't like milking cows. You hate it.
Yep.
And he told his dad that, and his dad about broke down. He said, I had no idea. And sold all the cows. He got a job at a factory putting nuts on bolts, is how he called it. I saw he and his family about a year, year and a half after he sold the cows at a brunch, Sunday morning brunch. Hadn't seen him for, you know, a year and a half. He was smiling. His wife was happy. His kids were happy. He came over to me. He goes, I love my job. He says, it's 40 hours a week and I leave and I don't think about it. And he said, with the farm, you know, but you want me to be better than I want me to be.
Yes.
And, you know, my dad told me when I graduated from veterinary school, he wasn't a real, you know, advice guy all the time and things like that. He just more did the right thing and hoped we would notice. But he put his hand on my shoulder. Neither one of my parents graduated from college, so it was kind of a big deal when I graduated from vet school. And my dad put his hand on my shoulder and he said, I'm going to give you two pieces of advice. He said, number one, don't try to change everybody the first day you meet them.
Yep.
Because he knows my personality. Fred, if you're my client and you tell me you want to be great, I'm already on the front of the tandem. Get your butt on the back and let's go. And that turns some people off. So I had to temper my quest of let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, my type A personality. And the second thing he told me, I always told the students in the business class, he said, treat every client like you would mom and I. Mm-hmm. So I would offer best care, but if they couldn't afford it or if it wasn't going to happen, I didn't, you know, sit there and chastise them for not doing that. But, you know, if I would look at that client, I'm going to get back to how you can help develop your clients. So if that farming operation, ranching operation business, if they have employees, and it can be family members, everybody, they have rules on that farm or ranch, right? For their employees. Again, no matter if it's your spouse, your kids, you've got rules and you need to follow them. And so let them know that we're no different. Our veterinary clinic has rules,
yep,
just like your business. So one of our rules at our clinic was nobody makes Mary unhappy. Mary was our most valuable employee. Every veterinary clinic, in fact, every business needs a Mary. She's just a most wonderful. She treated our clinic like it was her own and not arrogantly. It was so, she had so much pride working there and loved it, loved the clients. But so Mary came back to my office one time. The first 5-6 years I was in practice, I did some small animal. And this lady that had some cats and was a bank teller really liked me. I don't know why, but she really liked me and she always wanted to see me with her cats. So Mary comes back and says, hey, she says, I just got off the phone with Betty. She's one of her cats is sick or whatever. She's bringing it in at 4 o'clock when she's off work. And she said she was rude to me. And I said, really, Mary, tell me about that. And so she told me all this. Well, Betty was Miss Sweetness and nice to me every time. Just, oh, you're the best and blah, 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 blah. So Mary takes Betty, puts her in the exam room. I come walking in. Closed the door. I looked Betty in the eye and said, Mary said you were rude to her. I said, that's not going to happen again. I said, she is the most valuable person in the clinic. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I mean, she turned white. She looked at me and said, yes. Because if she would have done it again, she'd have been done. We would have fired her because nobody makes Mary unhappy. That was one of our rules. And, you know, you hear the saying, the customer is always right. That's BS. The customer is not always right. We were very, very good to our clients, but we drew a line in the sand and it was a firm line. And speaking of drawing line of sign, I'm going to give you two examples to illustrate. So number one, it's Saturday afternoon, about 3 o'clock, and Matt calls. I'm out on an emergency call. And my wife answers the phone in our house because we had a business line in our home. This was back in the olden days. And he says, hey, I need some vaccine for my sows. Can you have Doc run down to the clinic and set it out? And she said, well, he's on a farm call. I don't know when he'll be back. And my wife was the computer operator, bookkeeper at the client. He says, well, you work there. Can you go down and set it out? She goes, no, I've got two young boys at home and the one's taking a nap. I'm not leaving, you know. And he goes, well, I'm getting ready to head to town like right now. Matt lived 3 miles from our clinic, right? So I get, Denise calls me on the radio, tells me what happened, and I get back to clinic and I call him up and I say, hey, I said, you know, you could have come in here. We're open from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday and 8 to noon on Saturday. This is, you know, Saturday afternoon. Vaccine is not an emergency. I said, I'll set it out. But he says, that's not the way we do things. Okay, set it out. He bought it, you know, I'm paid for it, whatever. 6 months later, whatever, calls me at home Saturday afternoon. I'm at home. It's 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Same thing. Oh, you know, well, you know, his kids are available and he decides that's when he's, I didn't go down to the clinic.
Nope. I'm
like, nope, sorry. I says, you can go to the, you know, to the feed store or somewhere else. Well, they won't know what I need. And I go, sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. So the opposite. So David calls 7:30 at night. We have a new associate veterinarian. He's been with us for about 2 or 3 months. David calls and he says at 7:30 at night, he said, I am so sorry to bother you after hours. He said, my son is on vacation and he does all of the pig chores. This was a large farming operation. David and his family were probably easily in our top 10 clients, might have been our top 5 as far as revenue. Wonderful people. Oh, my heavens. Just, you know, if you had a flat tire, you want David to drive by because he's going to change it for you. He said, my son's gone on vacation. He said, we've got a sow that needs some oxytocin. And he says, I've run out. He said, I feel terrible. I am so sorry. Could you possibly run down to the clinic and set out a bottle of oxytocin? And our new associate kind of chastised him. You know, you should have been prepared, blah, blah, blah. And we lost money doing that, right? A $5.80 bottle of oxytocin. Our associate lived less than a mile from the clinic, and he complained about it the next day. And I looked at him and I said, excuse me? I said, this client has never done that before. He explained to you why this happened. I said, he's, you know, in our top 10 clients, and really that shouldn't matter, but he's just such a wonderful person.
Right.
He apologized over and over. And David called me the next day and said, hey, your young associate was not real, you know, forthcoming. And I told him, I said, he says, but you said you draw a line in the sand. I go, yep. And I said, David was on the right side of the line.
Yeah.
Says, he was totally, you know, that was not a problem whatsoever. So I hope that tells the difference.
Yes.
Between, you know, drawing a line. But not all clients are going to be A clients. Stop. Yep. Beating your head against the wall trying to make somebody better than they want to be themselves. Marty's story tells me that. Again, that was, I would probably been in practice 3 or 4 years, and I wish that would have happened even earlier, because I ticked some people off by thinking that they wanted to be A clients and they weren't. Now, we provided excellent care to all of our clients' animals. But like I said, my partner said, hey, some of our clients are not top end, but their animals still deserve to have good care. But so instead of asking clients their goals, like we would our A, B, and C clients, we just smiled and nodded and agreed. Yes. That things like the markets were bad and the big guys were forcing them out of business, or that it was the government's fault.
Yep.
And, you know, there's no reason to get in an argument that someone that has the mantra, my mind's made up, don't confuse me with the facts.
Yep.
So, yeah. You know, you just have to learn the clients, and you learn about the clients by asking about them.
Yeah. And I think we have to identify what is causing, you know, as a veterinarian is going through their day, what is causing that frustration. And I experienced that too, Mark. I know my associates experienced it. They would have a client that, you know, wasn't an A client, and, you know, they were having some kind of an issue and the associate wanted to help them, but the client didn't follow through. So it was unsuccessful. And exactly right. I would tell the associates, you can't care more than the client if they're not going to implement, you know, anything.
Right.
You do.
Right.
And, you know, that's just incredibly important. And it's a great story too, to demonstrate, because it is frustrating if you get called at night, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we have to, I call it giving everybody a little bit of grace.
Yes.
Understand that they've.
Yes.
Made an error.
Mm-hmm.
Repeat offenders.
Mm-hmm.
There's a
like
difference.
Matt.
Just like Matt, you know.
Yep.
We had a rule that we only serviced our own customers for emergencies, but we had a small dairy community, and there were times when someone would call me that wasn't a client. And if I was available, I would go out and do it and do the emergency, because I pretty much knew everybody, even if they weren't.
Sure.
A customer. And I always had a rule when I was washing up my boots. I always told them, we're taking new clients. We provide emergencies 365 days a year to our clients. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a client, we'll do emergencies. Otherwise, we won't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't frequent. But right. I specifically remember his name was Mark, called me. I went out, cleaned up the boots, explained it to him. He said, okay. Never heard from him again. He called. It was several years later. And I asked him, I said, do you remember what I told you the last time I was out there? And he goes, I actually do. I said, so do I. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say anything else.
Yep.
Right. And he goes, so you're not available? I said, not to a non-client. I'm not. And you just have to draw the line.
That's right.
You've explained it to them and you move on.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you have clients or even non-clients, right? That have these, that they're mad. It's a hostile situation or they're making unreasonable demands, just like you kind of explained. So what do you think, you know, how would you handle that situation? Especially let's say it was 30 years ago, Mark, and somebody is, you know, making these unreasonable demands of you.
Yeah. And I'm going to comment on what you said too, because every veterinary clinic has their rules, and one's not right and one's not wrong. It's whatever you decide on. We saw clients on an emergency basis that lived within our practice area that were not our clients. We would see them, and we said to them, you have to pay this bill when I'm finished. Cash on the barrelhead. Small animal clients, no problem. If they could drive into our clinic, if they were not a client, they had to pay, you know, on that. I could sit and tell stories for hours on clients that we picked up that turned into fantastic clients where we did that. I like your statement of this is only going to happen once. In my 15 years in DeWitt, I can never think of a time somebody called us for an emergency that wasn't a client and then did it a second time. So we didn't have to worry about
one.
That.
I had just the one. Mark was the only one in 20-some years. Right.
Well, you know, we had a small animal client come in and she called and she was from outside the practice area. Well, it didn't matter. They could drive there. And right away she said, Andrea Shelton told me to call you. Well, Andrea had worked at our clinic. She was the nicest person in the world. So already I like Valerie. She's a nice person. They told the cat got in the car and the fan belt pulled the end of the tail off. Anyway, she asked me what kind of suture I was going to use. And I looked at her and I said, I'm not sure. Why would you ask that? She goes, I'm an Ethicon representative. Well, she asked Alice when she picked the cat up to take it home the next day, what was our suture we used the most? She brought us about $500 worth of free samples.
Wow.
So that was a pretty good deal to take in a cat that was an emergency. It's the only time I ever saw them. They went back to their regular veterinarian. That's fine. So, okay. So you said, how do you deal with that upset client? First of all, let them vent and talk. All right. I mean, you've got to do that. If you start putting up the shield, you're deeper in trouble. So listen, really listen to them and use reflective listening techniques such as what I hear you saying is blank. Now, if you're wrong, if you screwed up, admit it. One of my dad's favorite saying was take your beating once and take it early.
Yes.
So if you're correct, I just keep stating the facts. I would just say, hey, here's, you know, did you call me to come out? Yes. You know, get them to say yes statements. That's really important too. So my example of this one is a very upset client. Client came into the office and of course the exam room is full of farmers and small animal clients. It always is when somebody's mad, right? And you know, when somebody comes in and tells you how wonderful you are, nobody's there. So he comes in and he's holding his bill and he's screaming, I got charged $285 for killing my cow. I'm not paying it. And Alice had worked our clinic forever. And she said, John, take a seat. She says, who took care of it? Dr. Hilton. Okay. So I go out. And what the situation was, he called at 6 in the morning on 4th of July. And he says, I had a cow that's looking really bad. And I said, okay, tell me about it. She's an 8 or 9 year old cow, had calves every year. He never preg checked. We didn't do any, you know, preventative work for him. I think I've seen him once 4 years earlier. Long story short, I go out there, reach in, the cow's got a dead stinking emphysematous breech fetus in there. He doesn't realize she's been trying to calve for 2 days. 4th of July, so it's hot, flies everywhere. the cervix is already closing down. I attempt to do a phetotomy and nothing will come through. And I looked at him and I said, hey, we've got two options here. We can do a cesarean. And I says, I think the chance of survival is only 10%. I said, I think it's a really bad option. I said, I'm sorry, but I think euthanasia is the other option. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he made the decision. I didn't make the decision. For God's sakes, don't make decisions for your clients. Give them information. You give recommendations. The client makes decisions. He looked at me and he says, this was my son's 4-H animal and blah, blah, blah. And I said, I am so sorry about that. I said, I feel terrible. I wish I could do something. You know, Ames, Iowa was 3 hours away to send her out there. I thought she'd be dead by the time she gets there. So we euthanized the cow. And I guess he had the unreasonable expectation that it was going to be free because his cow was dead. And so I just asked him, I said, did you call me at, you know, 5:30 or 6 in the morning on 4th of July? Yes. I said, did I come right out? Yes. I said, did I tell you this was a really bad situation? Yes. And I said, you know, I said, these are my costs for this. I've got to be paid for these things. And he calmed down a little bit, but I let him vent for a long time before I really started talking. And he finally didn't pay the bill right then. He walked out and he says, well, I'm never calling you again. And I really, you know, I'm a bad person some days inside my head. I'm saying, promise? You promise you'll never call me again? So yeah, that you're never going to turn that client into a good client. He was upset. He never called us again. You know, Fred, maybe you should do a whole podcast on, you know, different veterinarians, you know, handling upset clients. But
that's right.
I'm here to tell you, it didn't happen very often. It really, really didn't. We tried really hard to explain things to the clients. My partner, Dr. Spear, had developed a clientele that was outstanding. When neighboring veterinarians would go on vacation or go to CE meetings, they would call us. We were the largest clinic in the area in this part of rural Iowa for food animals. And they would call, hey, can you catch my emergency? Sure. And gosh, the difference in the clientele was night and day. You know, I just thank Dr. Spears so many times for developing that kind of clientele, because clients that got tired of hearing about preventative medicine and how important nutrition and stuff was, they got tired of us talking about that. They just called somebody else, right? They've got somebody else at home most times that's nagging at them. They don't need a second person nagging at them. Yeah. So,
and I think it also depends upon, you know, just like we talked about repeat offenders and all that, you know, when I would deal with an upset client, it also depended upon what type of client they were. And, you know, sometimes what I would ask the client, even if it was a, you know, not a good client, mm-hmm. I would always ask them the question, what would you suggest that we do to resolve this? Excellent. What would make you satisfied?
You bet. Yep.
And I remember mm-hmm. once I had a very good dairy producer client. He was upset about one thing and blah, blah, blah. And I just asked him that. I said, well, what would resolve this situation mm-hmm. for you? He was just having a bad day. I believe the situation was I sedated some calves for dehorning. It was a hot day and one calf had died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And he looked at me and he said, well, he goes, I think that you should consider paying for that calf. And you know what I did? I looked right at him and I said, okay, that's done.
Mm-hmm.
And he was floored.
Exactly.
He was floored.
Right.
I said, okay, well, I said, tell me the value of the calf.
Yep.
And I said, I'll either write you a check right now or we'll credit it towards mm-hmm. your account.
Mm-hmm.
He was floored.
Yeah,
and I mean, I would never have done that for like mm-hmm. a, you know, the client you just mm-hmm. described in mm-hmm. that situation. But this was one of our number one dairy clients.
Yes.
And
yes.
he was just, we all understand the stress they're going through. And he was just fixated on this one
Absolutely.
Issue. Why make it a big deal? It was a drop in the bucket. You know,
I mean, at the end of the year, you didn't notice it, right?
Cab is worth $200. Okay, here you go, $200.
Exactly. Right.
And it just instantaneously, he had respect for me because, and I told my associates that I said, we all know which clients are complainers. Okay.
Yes.
The ones that don't complain when they do, listen intently and ask them, what do you want?
Yep.
You know, and then sometimes all you have to do is just do it. They're not going to come back and take advantage of that type of client, you know?
That's
and I think the other thing, Mark, like you said, is that, these are rare circumstances most of the time. And I think one of the things that we get caught up with as veterinarians and humans is that we fixate on the bad stuff that happens
right.
every day.
Right.
I still remember this week, you know, I'm no longer in private practice, but this week there was a meeting down at the Ohio Department of Agriculture, and I thought some of my former dairy clients would want to go. So I called them up and asked them if they wanted to head down there. And as I was driving down Crum Road, which I've driven down 10,000 times because it was the right. road from the clinic to the dairy area, right. all those old feelings came
yep.
back to me.
Oh, yeah.
Every morning when I drove down that road, yep. I felt like I had a purpose,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
How do we identify what our purpose is and
right.
capturing that wonderfulness of being right. a food animal veterinarian?
Right, right. Well, I just rode on Ragbri, the bike ride across Iowa.
And yes.
This was the 12th time I've done it. I did it from 90 to 98 every year. I was the official pie judge for 7 of those years. So, you know, I was kind of famous in Iowa. But the reason I went this year is because it overnighted in DeWitt. As I was riding my bicycle through Clinton County and passing Al Schrader's farm and the Whitman's farm and the Kettleson's farm, I'm just flooded with positive emotions of I was on that farm. I helped them, or, you know, oh, we had a really tough case there one time, but, you know, them and, you know, we got the nutritionist involved and we solved that problem, or I called in somebody else or whatever. But yeah, the emotion, it's a people business.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's just so much a people business. And, you know, I told the veterinary students that I said, you know, I know you're working with animals, but I said, you're going to have to get along with the humans. You're going to have to figure out somehow to get along with the humans that are taking care of the animals. Cause it's just such a key to practice, you know, to be successful on the thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we want to focus on the good, but sometimes, you know, like you told the story about how you suggested to that client that they that you weren't going to come anymore. But, you know, sometimes we have to end a VCPR,
right.
you know. And
yeah.
so what, you know, what are some ways to do that in a professional manner to tell the client, you know, this isn't working out, you know. We probably get fired more than we fire clients sometimes,
yes.
but, you know, how can we, if we just feel like, you know, because I always, one of the things I always told my dairy producers, we had a signed VCPR with our dairy producers. And I said, the most important letter in VCPR is R.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-way street. I even had dairy producers where I told them, I said, okay, these are the things that, in the VCPR that I'm going to require of you. You have to follow my protocols. You have to tell me if there's a residue violation so we can make sure that one doesn't happen again. What was a mistake? Identify the bottlenecks, et cetera, et cetera. But then I also told them, now you write down what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
yes.
floored at that.
Yes,
they were
exactly,
floored.
Exactly.
And they were never unreasonable. They're just like, mm-hmm. oh, I could put that in there. I said, yeah, whatever
right.
you want. I mean, I remember I had one dairy producer that had employees and he said, you will monitor for any signs of abuse and you will immediately notify management if you see anything mm-hmm. inappropriate.
Great.
And I'm like, okay, yep, put it in there.
Yep.
So
yeah, we got to know
the R is going
it.
Bad.
So,
yeah.
yeah.
How do we move past it?
Right. Right. So I think, you know, I think it depends. It depends on the client. So I'll give you a story about Dick. He was a client and we were out there every once in a while. He had a beef cow calf herd and he decided to get into the Holstein heifer business. And that was fairly common in our area. The guys would go buy Holstein heifer calves, either from the sale barn, most likely, or multiple dairies. So he called one, Tuesday morning and, you know, let's say it was 9 o'clock and he said to Alice, he says, hey, I'd like Dr. Hilton to come out. He says, I've got 50 Holstein heifers weighing about 500 pounds. I want Sleeve to find out, you know, if any of them are free Martins. Can you come out this afternoon and do that? And she said, wow, your lucky day. He's just had a cancellation earlier this morning. What time you want him there at 1 o'clock? He says, oh, 1:30 would be better. Okay, great. So I go out there at 1:30 and palpate the 50 heifers and, you know, there's 7 or 8 free Martins. We tag him and he takes them back to the sale barn and sells them as free Martins. He didn't want somebody else to get stuck with them.
Sure.
So it's, I don't know, 2 months later, something like that. So he calls up. It's Tuesday morning. 9 o'clock, he calls and he says, hey, I want Dr. Hilton to come out this afternoon and sleeve 50 head of Holstein heifers. And she said, well, he's booked this afternoon. She said, it looks like he's got an opening, Friday afternoon. Nope. I need him done today. And she's like, well, none of our doctors are available. He says, well, I'll call somebody else. Okay. And she told me this, and I thought, that's interesting. And he did it again. And she told him, she said, Dick, she said, you know, call a week or so ahead. She said, Dr. Hilton tends to do mostly herd health, preventative medicine stuff. So his schedule's a lot of times booked for weeks in advance.
Yes.
I seriously, Fred, I would seriously go for weeks without seeing a sick animal because yeah. I loved preventative medicine. So that's what I gravitated toward. So she told him, hey, call, you know, ahead of time, blah, blah, blah. Well, fast forward a few more months, does the exact same thing. And I told Alice, I said, if he calls again the same day, I don't care what I'm doing. I'm not available.
Right.
And, you know, if I'm just an arm to him, sorry, that's not good enough. I, you know, and I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying if he doesn't value me any more than any veterinarian he can grab to just stick an arm in a cow, I thought I was value added to him, you know, talking to him about nutrition and making sure Rumensin was in the feed and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we just were too busy for him. And, you know, he just stopped calling because, you know, it just didn't work. It, interestingly enough, on his cow-calf herd, he'd call a month ahead of time. Hey, I want Mark to come out and palpate cows and take care of the calves. That's fine. We'd do that. But on the other ones, he just, you know, he decided that he needed me. He needed me instantly. So,
yeah.
So for most of our clients, that they didn't adapt to our rules. You know, we were talking about earlier, we were just too busy to get them in. That was our, rather than firing a client, we were just awfully busy and it was going to be weeks before we could get them, you know, worked into our schedule. They'd call somebody else. And I can't think of a client that we did this to numerous times that kept calling us. They just finally quit calling. The only client I can think of that I fired was a small animal client. And she'd taken this again. This was my first few years of practice when I did some small animal. And she had a Shar Pei dog. I didn't even know what the heck that was. I had to look it up, you know, in a book to find out, you know, this wrinkly, strange looking thing. So she called and, you know, just physical exam and vaccinations and things like that. Fine. You know, she lived a fair amount away. You know, gosh, there were probably six veterinary clinics between her house and our clinic, but whatever. So she brings it up to me and tells me that she's been to five other veterinarians that have all, quote, said they don't have time to see her anymore. And I'm thinking, oh, crud, what did I get it myself into? So one day she came in for an exam. I don't remember what was wrong with the dog. You know, maybe skin problems. I don't know. And it was summertime. Our windows were open in the clinic and the window was open in her car. And she had a baby out there less than a year, 2 years old that started crying. And she said, oh, I need to go get my son. I said, that's fine. She walked out of the room and this dog starts growling and lunged at me. And oh, I'm my. Back. Our exam rooms were pretty small and I'm backing up against the wall going, the thing comes at me, I'm not sure I can take it, right? She comes walking back in. As soon as the dog sees her, the dog's wagging its tail and looking great. And I told her, I said, hey, I said, your dog growled at me and then lunged at me. And she goes, oh, I can't believe that she would do that. Oh, I can't believe it. I said, okay. I said, step outside the exam room. And I said, so the dog can't see you. And I said, just listen and then peek in. Immediately, the dog starts growling like crazy and is lunging at me. She walks in and the dog, you know, looks like a kid that just had his, you know, get caught with his hand in a candy jar and started wagging its tail. And I looked at her and I said, I am sorry, but we will have to add our name to the list of the other veterinarians that will not see your dog again.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, I'm seriously worried about your young son with that yes. dog in the house. I said, I think you've got a real, you know, potential issue on your hands. She neglected that. She goes, oh, the dog's great at home. Oh, and asterisk, her husband was a lawyer. And I thought, you know what? This really is not somebody, you know, that I want to deal with. So really that's the only client we fired in the 15 years I was in practice. The others, we were just all too busy to get to them and they kind of got the message. And, yeah. and again, it was very few, you know, I walked into, you know, if you're starting a brand new clinic from scratch and you have no clients and you put out your shingle, that's like starting the mile run. at the starting line. I walked into DeWitt Veterinary Clinic. Yeah, Fred, I had only 100 yards to go, right? I had 3.8 miles already behind me because the heavy work had already been done. And I, you know, I understand when new grads want to start their own business, but boy, in most instances, the huge majority of time, I think you're way better off to join a clinic and get some mentorship and, you know, have that established clientele. It's a tough road to hoe when you're starting out. I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah. We used to, our receptionist, when, you know, non-clients would call and need a herd check that day, you know, or a specific time, especially in the morning, you know, she would literally tell them that, you know, that spot is taken forever until that dairy producer goes out of business.
Right.
I'm sorry, Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning. No, that herd check is never, ever available unless, you know, they cancel. So it's true. So, you know, Mark, as we wrap up here, you know, I've enjoyed listening to, your stories, but can you think of one about a particularly challenging client, another one that, when you were in practice and how you resolved that?
Yep. So Mike was probably, I think he was 24 years old. He had a small swine for a finish operation and he had a beef cow calf herd. The farm was a mess. The cell feeders in with the pigs were never adjusted. There was feed all over the ground being wasted, which drove me crazy. Boars didn't get castrated on time. He'd forget to give vaccinations at the proper time. Beef cows calve nearly year round. Calves perform poorly. And I really dreaded the 3 or 4 times a year that I would have to go to the farm. Well, our local newspaper, the DeWitt Observer, came out twice a week, and like lots of small communities, they have different festivals and different things. We had the Skeffington Run, named after a real community leader, every summer or every fall. It was in the fall. And by golly, I saw his picture in the paper. So, you know, here's Mike's picture as one of the runners. And in fact, I looked and he placed in the top 5 in his age group. Now, I'm not a runner, but I decided I would be interested in him on my next visit and ask about his hobby. And like I said, my grandpa always said, it's better to be interested than interesting. So I'm not a runner, but I love to bicycle. And I thought, hey, maybe I also likes to bicycle. You know, we'll have something in common. I want to ask him about that. So I pulled in, I set up the chute, process his calves, and I asked him about his hobby. And he said, yeah, it gives me time to think. Huh. And I said, tell me about that. Because we really never talked about his life. I didn't know anything about him. And he started talking. Super quiet guy. First time he'd really ever talked. He told me that his parents were driving home one evening and were hit and killed by a drunk driver. Hmm. He was 18 years old, had just graduated from high school. He was an only child, and he was planning to join his parents in their farming operation, corn, soybeans, swine, cattle. He kept talking. But I don't think I was listening very well because I'm thinking what a horrible person I am for judging him. Because I had, in my mind, he was lazy or dumb or a combination of the two. And that conversation changed me. And I started asking people, tell me your story. Because if you're interested in people, just as my grandfather was, then you've got more empathy for them.
Yeah. And that's so true. And we don't know, you know, the path that all of our clients are on, especially if we're not familiar with them. So, you know, Mark, that's such a great story. I'm going to use your grandfather's quote.
Yep.
It's better to be interested in this interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to just challenge our listeners, you know, first and foremost, like Mark said, ask questions, let your clients talk. If they're having a bad day, I remember my first boss told me one time after I got really rode hard by one of our clients, he said, sometimes they're upset and they need to unload. And sometimes that person is you.
That's right.
And so he said, you just gotta, you know, move forward. They probably feel bad about it afterwards. But then the last thing I'll say to our listeners, which is always a challenge and I still work with every day, is remember scope and perspective. As Mark and I have shared these stories, the good clients far outnumber the bad.
Absolutely. And
repeat offenders, you can get rid of. But for the most part, work with your clients, develop them, and establish your rules for the clinic. Stick with them and try to make every day of veterinary practice a day that you love. So, Mark, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast and sharing your stories and your advice to our listeners.
Thanks, Fred. Good to be with you.